part of the COVID-19 Humanity Betrayal Memory Project entails people having live interviews online with our interviewers who have lost family members. So everybody's a victim. And a while back, it's been over a year ago, a lot of the interviewers got together and they realized they were all hearing similar comments from the interviewees. And Tracy Byrd, one of our interviewers, was the lead proponent of let's make a list. Let's figure out what we hear the most of. And that's where these commonalities came from. My husband was one of the lucky ones. I think he's only got 18 of the commonalities. Some people have all 25. Most people have all 25. So if you have, if you're on this call and you're thinking about the lady you go to church with or the guy you work with who lost somebody and they told him, COVID just does that. Please hand them the link, which is in the chat, for the 25 commonalities and say, do you remember whether or not your loved one went through any of these things? And give them a chance to think about what actually happened when their loved one was in the hospital. So we're going to start with number one, isolation of the victim. This is automatic. It happens at the very beginning. As soon as that person enters the emergency room and tests positive, no advocacy is allowed in person. All of their family members are pulled away from them immediately and banned from the hospital. Number two, strict adherence to the EUA protocols. Only option allowed. These are allowed treatments. You do not have constitutional rights in the hospital anymore. Only option allowed to victims are hospital protocol drugs, remdesivir, also called Veklury, baricitinib, also called Olumiant, toxolizumab, also known as Actemra. These have been known. We have recorded instances in their medical records where the patient never was told they were getting that, or they were told they were getting the COVID cocktail, or they found out about it when they woke up in the morning and the bag had been hung while they were asleep. Denied alternative treatments. You've heard this over and over again. They were denied every request and often ridiculed and laughed at for treatments like vitamins, ivermectin, budesonide, hydroxychloroquine, etc. They were also given false statements made that they are not FDA approved or do not work. That's not true. They're all FDA approved. The FDA, however, did not want them used for COVID. There's more to that story, but we'll go to that another time or a little later. They were denied informed consent under the PrEP Act. The patients were supposed to receive informed consent of all EUA drugs. We have yet to find anybody who received that paperwork, signed for it, or admitted that they heard about it. Most people did not. No one that we've talked to has. So they were denied that option. That includes providing regarding medications, treatments, intubation, or any other procedures. Gaslighting is really, really bad in the hospital, from the hospital staff, and it doesn't matter what level it comes from, nurses, technicians, doctors. The victim and the family are constantly told that the victim will die because they are unvaccinated if they refuse to be vaccinated or if they don't comply with hospital protocol or ventilation. Constantly, families are told that their loved one was a very sick man or a very sick woman. Removal of communication devices. This includes the call lights for the nurses. This includes glasses, cell phones, iPads. They're all removed from their possession or placed on a counter or in a drawer on the other side of the room, and the patient is not able to get out of bed. dehumanization. This is a methodical treatment that just seems to get more horrifying as the days drag on. The patient will often describe it as being treated like an animal. Many of the patients are left in rooms, and you know the ICU rooms all have glass walls. They're left uncovered, no sheet, no nightgown, naked. Now, not all ICUs are closed to the entire public. There's cleaning personnel. There may be people who are allowed to see their loved one because maybe they were in a car accident and they haven't been diagnosed as COVID. So everybody walking by sees this patient who is naked, face up or face down, does not matter. They have a pervasive sense of wrongdoing. Family members, friends, and often the victim all had the feeling something was wrong. I had that feeling, and I had the feeling that if I did not act like a good little girl and go along with everything and be very nice to everybody and very sweet, that it would cause more pain to my husband. Vaccination discrimination. Based on their vaccine statements, they were mocked status. They were mocked and sometimes verbally and physically abused for being unvaccinated. And while we're on that subject, it has become a matter of no argument that the Epic system in many of these hospital systems was basically rigged. There's a drop-down menu when the patient's information is being admitted. When they're coming in, vaccination status for COVID-19 is part of that. It's two options on that drop-down. Unvaccinated or don't know, regardless. Now, that means that even if the patient comes in and has a card in their hand that said, I've had all my shots, there's no place for these people to change it. And many patients don't go any place where it's even notified anywhere to a hospital because they've gone to the CVS, who doesn't share the same database. Or they were in the line over at the fairgrounds in their car. Those things aren't always in the same database. So all they do is put in don't know because they have no way of changing it. So you could be fully vaccinated and it will list you as don't know. Rapid oxygen increase. Oxygen supplementation increased quickly, causing lung complications and damage, leading to mechanical ventilation. What most people don't know, you've probably heard all your life that if you drink too much water, it's worse than not drinking enough because water can be poisonous to your body. Oxygen is the same way. Pure oxygen with no break at high volume push is painful and it can damage the lungs. And for some reason, it's hard to believe that they don't know it. They are medical professionals. They keep looking at the blood gases and raising the amount of oxygen being forced on the patient without addressing the problem that they have a gas exchange problem, not necessarily an oxygen problem. Refusal to communicate. Doctors, nurses, and hospital administration refusing to communicate with family or advocate. Why should they call you back? They own it. They own that unit. They're too busy. And doctors, I can tell you for a fact, doctors don't call you back. And when they do, they're very dismissive. Dehydration and starvation. Yes, in America, denial of food, water, or any nutrition, and in some cases given diuretics or laxatives at that same time, destabilizing the human body unbelievably fast because dehydration and starvation will do that. You've got a sick person who's not eating or drinking, and they're being assaulted with a lot of medications. They were being assaulted by everything. Restraint abuse, physical restraint and or chemical restraints used, with a failure to follow legal requirements around the use of restraints. Ventilation has been used as a restraint or as a method of behavioral control. That's in the medical records, that the patient has been ventilated as a behavioral control. We have many patients like that. And when we say chemical restraints, I'll tell you right now, they layer different types of sedation, which not only inhibits breathing, it also prevents them from moving to get out of the bed, to scratch an itch, doesn't matter. Bathroom denial, denial of the bathroom use. They're often forced onto a catheter and or the rectal tube because I'm too busy to be coming in here and helping you do the bathroom. We're just going to give you a catheter so that we don't have to worry about you falling because you keep insisting on going to the bathroom. Non-emergency ventilation. The victim and the family are told that it's just to give the lungs a rest. Cannot tell you how many patients were told it's time to vent you. They're on the phone talking with their family members. They're eating snacks, talking to the doctor while the family member's on the phone, and suddenly the phone is taken away and it's turned off and they're ventilated. DNR pressure or shenanigans. Pressure to sign a DNR, ignored or falsified DNR. DNR is a do not resuscitate. I can tell you that in the state of Wisconsin, Scott Shera is mounting a pretty good argument about the death of his daughter, Grace. In her case, the DNR was put on her the morning she died, even though the parents had repeatedly said they did not want a DNR. She was not DNR, she was full code, even though they didn't feel that she was that sick. But he found that in the state of Wisconsin, the DNR can be placed by any medical doctor in the hospital, except for the doctor in the emergency room. Any other setting within that hospital, they can put that DNR on that patient without advocate or patient permission. Palliative care pressure. The victim and the family are pressured into palliative care, comfort care, or hospice. Family denied participation in the palliative care consult meeting. Palliative care ordered without consent. In the chat, there is an article about what palliative care means. Because all of these, palliative care, hospice, and comfort care, I know for a fact, end in a euthanasia shot. Because remember, the hospital does not want another death on their hands. They do not want these mortality statistics, even though the patients are actively dying in their care. If they can change the status of the patient to palliative, comfort, or hospice care, the bed doesn't change, the room doesn't change, but the status changes, and therefore that mortality figure does not go against hospital metrics. That means that the hospital CEO and any investors don't see a downgrade in the performance of that hospital based on mortality statistics because it happened under hospice care, even though nothing changed as far as the location of the patient. And that has been tracked on, I believe it was CBS. In that article that's in the chat, there's a link to that news report. Isolated even in death. Denied access to the dying victim, denied access to view the body after death, and denial of last rites. Well, we know in New York, at the very beginning, there were patients who died and were cremated by the hospital, and their families weren't even notified of the death prior to the cremation. That patient was already cremated before they were told their family member had passed. Many people have not been able to visit their family members except for outside a window. They can't touch them as they're dying. They can't comfort them. They can't speak to them, even if they're unconscious. They cannot go into that room. Police or security involvement. Police or security is used to keep the victim isolated, families threatened with arrest. Now, Andy went through this. He was dragged away from the time point where his dad was killed in front of his mother. And all of that is on his website. That is in the chat. But he's not the only one. I have read accounts with other organizations like frontline nurses. They're using dogs also in the hospital to spread fear as they decide that maybe you're asking too many questions and you need to leave, little lady. And they'll bring the security dogs in with the handlers in uniform, sometimes armed, to encourage you to move along. Refusal of transfer. Refusal to change doctors or make hospital transfer. Now, our friend Gail, who works with us, is a great advocate. She tried desperately to fire her doctor and could never get rid of him. Also, refusing to transfer comes under a couple of different headings. Sometimes they'll just outright say, oh, he's too weak. We can't move him. Other times they'll say, yeah, you find someplace for him. And then the family members will find someplace to take him. And then the night before the transfer, suddenly something happens and it's always an emergency. And now he's too unstable and he has to stay. Infections and injuries, sepsis, MRSA, or hospital-acquired infections, pressure sores, skin tears, and necrosis. Yeah, and sometimes the hospital documents those sores, and, I mean, measuring them, the size of dinner plates in some cases, deep to the bone. Neglect and lack of basic care, general hygiene or grooming, bathing, and linen changes. That's a fact. Gail has pictures. Her hair was, she couldn't take care of her hair. They had her trapped in that bed and she was not allowed to get up. Her hair was never touched and ended up having to be just cut really short because it was so matted. They could not do anything with it. Not only was she not bathed, she wasn't given any kind of mouth care. She had thrush so bad from the oxygen and the lack of care. And she happens to be alive to tell us about it. Our family members, many of them, we didn't get the chance to know exactly what they went through. Nighttime emergencies. Family woken up and pressured to make instant life and death choices with little information. The staff is attempting to scare them or confuse them. Oh yeah, they'll yell at you in a heartbeat. You've got to tell us now. We need to know now. There's no option. You can't call a friend. You can't call your family doctor. You can't do anything. You have to make a decision right now. And all you're going on is what you're being told. You can't be there, and they certainly aren't going to let you come in or come wait for you to get there. Perception of malevolence. Victim states or feels like hospital staff is torturing them or going to kill them. Every survivor tells us the same thing. They just felt like they were going to die. There are text messages on their phones. One young man, he was young, he was under 20, and he was texting all his friends, they're going to kill me in here. Then there's the man who was trying to text his family and realized that his texts were not going out. For whatever reason, he couldn't get a text to connect. So what did he do? He screenshot everything. And his family didn't find those screenshots until they went looking for pictures in his phone of him for his service. And they found out he was trying to tell them, they're not feeding me. They tell me I'm dying. They're going to kill me. Please come get me. And all of those were screenshot. But he couldn't get a text to go out. And they know that the nurses had access to his passcode because they asked for that passcode. So they could use his phone when he was allowed to FaceTime with them. Unqualified staff. Treatment by foreign travel, FEMA, or unqualified medical staff. We know that there were many FEMA nurses, and unqualified staff has become very obvious because the FBI has a task force under the name of Operation Nightingale. Outside nurses were brought into the country and they went to school at a couple of different schools in the U.S. and they were able to get certificates that allowed them to travel and work within the United States, but they were not trained in the United States. These certificates were purchased, and the FBI is working on that process right now. And this includes some doctors. So the only thing that comes to mind, when the hospitals were locked down and all elective procedures were removed from hospitals because, quote unquote, we're going to be overwhelmed in the ICUs, but we can't have all these other things going on in the hospital because of the potential for infection. So a lot of your average technicians and nurses who were working in other parts of the hospital were sent home. Now your ICU nurses are the only ones that are handling everything. So then they brought in traveling nurses who got paid immense amount of money. According to Nurse Aaron, $10,000 a week was a norm. But keep in mind that these nurses, when they're dealing with your loved one, you're not getting to see the person who is the daughter of the lady you go to church with. There is no connection. And from many countries, they don't have the same vision of empathy or morality that we have. And if they're concerned about deportation, they do whatever they're told by a doctor or any other perceived authority figure, and they don't alter it, they don't change it, they don't think about it, they just do what they're told. And that is all of the 25.